Middle East tinderbox as tensions escalate between Israel and Hezbollah.
The general paradigm that neither Hezbollah nor Iran and perhaps Israel do not want an enlarged war still holds. But one has to question, is that going to hold?
Families of the hostages still held by Hamas fear an expanding war could be a death sentence for their loved ones.
Every moment they feel like the clock ticking and that their beloved are in such a dire situation.
And world leaders have a full plate of complex global issues to tackle when they gather next week for the annual UN General Assembly. Join us as we explore the issues in the news. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London in Washington. Rocket fire pounded northern Israel Friday while Israeli warplanes carried out intensive airstrikes on southern Lebanon, including a rare strike on the Beirut suburbs. Israel and Hezbollah militants have been fighting across the Lebanese border since the Gaza conflict erupted on October 7, 2023. The conflict intensified significantly this week after an unprecedented attack when thousands of pagers and walkie-talkies exploded across Lebanon, fueling fears of a wider Middle East war that could drag in the U.S. and Iran. White House National Security spokesman John Kirby Friday said there's still time for diplomacy.
We don't want to see escalation. We don't want to see a second war, a second front in this war opened up at the border with Lebanon. Everything we're doing is going to be involved in trying to prevent that outcome.
For insights on what's at stake and what could come next, we're joined by Edward Djerinjian, former U.S. ambassador to Israel and current senior fellow at Harvard Kennedy Belford Center. Your initial thoughts on what's been happening this week?
What we're witnessing now in the Israeli-Lebanese confrontation with Hezbollah is an important escalation of hostilities. The Israeli technical expertise that they've demonstrated in penetrating these pagers that Hezbollah militants use has set back Hezbollah's internal communication system and obviously has dented its command and control capabilities. So the Israelis can certainly chalk that up as a tactical victory. But what we're witnessing since then is a escalation in terms of Israelis striking Dahiya, the Shiite-dominated neighborhood in southern Beirut, what appears to be a targeted assassination against a high-level Hezbollah official. There is obviously much collateral damage because of the density of the neighborhood and many killed and wounded. This is another notching up of the ladder of escalation. The general paradigm that neither Hezbollah nor Iran and perhaps Israel do not want an enlarged war still holds. But one has to question, is that going to hold? And will there be a major escalation? What is confusing, and the situation is quite confusing on the ground in Lebanon and Israel, is that on the one hand, you have the tit-for-tat that's escalating. And on the other hand, you have the Minister of Defense of Israel, Gallant, saying that the Israeli military, the IDF, must prepare for a serious military operation against Lebanon. If that connotes another land war, that would truly be a major game changer. And I think then the situation would escalate possibly into a regional war. But the Israelis should take a close look at their recent history. In 2006, they've had a difficult time being embedded and bogged down in Lebanon. It took them 18 years to get out of Lebanon after they invaded in the 1980s. And then in 2006, it was a very difficult military struggle. So is Israel going to actually seriously contemplate and act on land incursion. Netanyahu's government is under a lot of pressure because you have 50 or 60,000 Israelis who have been displaced in northern Israel. It's a very serious political issue for the Israeli government, but the options are dire. Now, the one thing that can reduce the violence and prevent, in my eyes, an escalation is if there is an agreement on the situation in Gaza, the ceasefire, the release of hostages, and the beginning of determining the way forward in Gaza. Hezbollah has said, made clear that, and Houthis have made clear that if the ceasefire and the fighting ends in Gaza, then they will reduce their military operations or end their military operations against Israeli targets. That all has to be determined.
It seems like from the outside that this escalation, does this dramatically reduce the chances of a ceasefire hostage deal? I know that U.S. officials and Qatar and Egypt say they've all been working on that, but we've been hearing for months, and we're also hearing warnings time is running out for the hostages. It would seem like this would make it more difficult.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the escalation that we're seeing in Lebanon now makes it more difficult because it's heightening tensions, and public opinion in the Arab world is becoming more hardened. The Saudis have reiterated just recently at the highest level that there will be no normalization with Israel unless there is an independent Palestinian state. The situation is getting much more difficult both at the highest political levels and in the world of public opinion on the ground. So yes, it's making it more difficult, but that is the, in my eyes, the common denominator to reduce the tensions is getting to the ceasefire. Now, the Biden administration has been working very hard on trying to get that, but it's been elusive because both sides have been changing their conditions, as you know. But especially, you have to question the policy of Bibi Netanyahu. You know, it's very interesting. What is Netanyahu's endgame? That's a big question, because when he addressed the U.S. Congress, he said, my strategy is the de-radicalization and the demilitarization of Gaza. Well, that's not a strategy. That's a tactic. A strategy would be a post-Gaza scenario whereby after a ceasefire and a humanitarian assistance to alleviate the suffering in Gaza and then steps forward to reconstituting a way forward toward a negotiated settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a strategic endgame. But you don't hear that. You don't hear that from the Israeli side at all. You don't hear it, obviously, from the Palestinian side. So the prospects are really dire. I think the parties, all the parties, are waiting for our elections on November 5th. They want to know who the next president of the United States is, and they will adjust their tactics and their strategy accordingly.
But a lot can happen, as we've seen just in the last week. And as you said, there's a lot at stake here, potentially escalating into a broader regional war. Do you think that this could potentially drag in the U.S. and even Iran? Do you, as you said, think this is just going to continue to be sort of a tit for tat until the election?
I think the risks for a major escalation are there, because we could be entering into that landmark book by Barbara Tuchman, The March of Folly. This may be a march of folly whereby, through maybe not even deliberate decisions on the part of the adversaries, but miscalculations that lead to a larger war. I think one of the worst outcomes that could occur in the Middle East crisis today is if the United States is dragged into a regional war that the parties themselves have marched into. I think that would be totally against the national security interests of the United States. We have witnessed historically the consequences of Vietnam, the consequences of Afghanistan, involvement in Afghanistan, beyond getting rid of al-Qaeda, which was a valid goal, but then a forever war in Afghanistan, the terrible miscalculated war in 2003 against Iraq, in which we got bogged down. This would be another march of folly. And I think it's a high responsibility of American leaders, whoever's in power, to avoid going against the true national security interests of the United States, which is to avoid getting involved in a military confrontation with Iran. The Iranians don't want it. We don't want it. Does Netanyahu's government want it? It's a question.
There are those out there that would say that the actions of Netanyahu would appear that he wants to continue escalating war, potentially for political reasons. He's saying he wants to get these people back to their homes in the north. But why not prioritize bringing the hostages back home to their loved ones as a priority as well? What the families are saying, time is running out.
That's exactly the focal point of the efforts by the Biden administration and others to get the Netanyahu government to prioritize the release of the hostages. And also, one doesn't talk about it, but it's not only the release of the Israeli hostages, but Palestinian prisoner exchanges. In other words, the liberation of a number of Palestinians in Israeli jails, then leading to stabilization and reconstruction of Gaza, and then leading to a point where the parties can be led to a negotiated settlement in the long run. This is a strategy, but Netanyahu has not prioritized. Let's be frank. His priority is quote-unquote total victory over Hamas in Gaza, and now he has shifted, now that the Israeli military has made clear that the IDF cannot do much more to reduce Hamas's military capabilities in Gaza. They've reduced the military capabilities of Hamas significantly. And now the attention is turned toward the north, the Lebanese border, Hezbollah. It's a formula for perpetual warfare. And we don't know where that's going to lead. And therefore, a major effort has to be made to contain this conflict. Again, I get back, if the focal point and the release of the hostages and a ceasefire and release of the hostages in Gaza can do much to get us back to a point where there's this very dangerous standoff between, for example, Hezbollah and Israel and the Houthis, that they're saying that if the ceasefire is accomplished, achieved in Gaza, then they will stop their hostilities. But Netanyahu has a different agenda. He has three major indictments against him. His major goal is to stay in power and therefore have political immunity. And he has his own agenda, which may not be serving the national security interests of Israel and of Israel's supporters.
And I would imagine that every day that goes by, we don't know what will happen with the remaining hostages that are still alive in Gaza being held.
Yes, the speculation is dire on that. We don't know how many are alive. And every day that goes by, the Israeli hostages, their lives are at peril. It's a tragic situation on all sides. The number of Palestinian civilian casualties is immense. Mm-hmm. The fact that 1,200 Israelis were killed in the Hamas attack on October 7th was one of the largest human losses on the Israeli side in the Arab-Israeli conflict. I mean, both sides have suffered, and yet you have a government in Israel that, frankly, has as its goal this concept of total victory. Let me end my remarks by giving you one conversation I had when I was the U.S. ambassador to Israel when Yitzhak Rabin was prime minister. He told me in one discussion we had, he's obviously made this public also, here's one of the military heroes of Israel who's fought all of its wars and who ultimately paid with his life because he then became a statesman to achieve peace. He told me, he said, Ed, there is absolutely no military solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There's only a political solution. I wish we had leaders in Israel that had this vision and acted on it. We don't.
Thank you very much. Always appreciate your perspective.
My pleasure speaking with you.
Edward Djerejian, former U.S. ambassador to Israel and current senior fellow at Harvard Kennedy Belford Center. Compounding the years of crises that have upended the lives of people in Lebanon, the sounds of this week's mass explosions of pagers and walkie-talkies, as well as new airstrikes, are painfully similar to the horrific explosion 4 years ago of haphazardly stored ammonium nitrates that tore through Beirut's port.
Beirut and its inhabitants are definitely remain traumatized by the port explosion that happened in 2020. So that sound is deeply, deeply affecting to the residents of Beirut.
That was correspondent Jacob Russell in Beirut. And the escalation between Israel and Hezbollah could also be complicating efforts to secure a deal to end the war in Gaza and release the remaining Hamas-held hostages. Reporters covering a cabinet meeting Friday asked President Joe Biden if it's still realistic to get a deal given the recent events.
If I ever said it's not realistic, we might as well leave. A lot of things don't look realistic until we get them done. We have to keep at it.
For the families of those still held hostage, the latest developments have amplified their fears for the fate of their loved ones. I spoke with Dr. Haggai Levine with the Hostages and Missing Families Forum in Israel, which has been pleading for the Netanyahu government to prioritize a deal over starting a new front of the war. First, let's just start with, what is the mood on the ground in Israel right now?
Well, it's chaotic times. And you wake up in the morning never know how the day would evolve and what happened last night. And we are worried all the time about the hostages, about the uprooted population in the south and the north, about our personal security, about the stability, political stability, security stability. So it's very difficult times, and also with not only external tension, but also internal tension with the demonstrations and the pressure on the government to take actions to seal a deal to release the hostages. And of course, in the middle of everything is the hostages and their families who, you know, survived over 11 months of ambiguous loss, of a struggle. And I'm with the families all the time, so I feel their pain and frustration and suffering. Although I can say, despite all this, we see outstanding heroism and resilience of the Israeli people, of the families, and of the hostages themselves, who find ways to overcome and to cope with the situation.
What is your group's reaction to the Israeli government's widening operation in the north, explosions, the massive explosions in Lebanon, Hezbollah's vow of revenge, Israeli warplanes? Is this making the deal more difficult?
Well, first we have to understand that almost a year now, a large portion of the Israeli population is constantly under attack in the north. Many were killed, many were uprooted, and, you know, even some of the hostages' families themselves used to live in the north and have to move to central Israel. So all of us know that we need somehow to solve the situation in the north, hopefully with a peaceful solution, but, you know, the situation needs to be solved. Now, saying that, still, families are extremely concerned that any war, conflict in the north means a death sentence to the hostages. The two, the south and the north, are linked. And once you go to the north, to a large extent, you lose attention to the south. Families think it means that the chances of sealing a deal will go down significantly, and they are very worried about that. Interestingly, there is another claim that getting to a deal in the south will solve the situation in the north. So many of the families are saying we don't need a combat solution in the north, but we need to find a way to seal a deal in the south with the Hamas, to release all the hostages and stop the war in the south. And then we will also stop the war in the north, hopefully with a sustainable solution to the constant attack from Hezbollah on Israel.
And do you think that the government is listening to that alternative potential deal?
It seems that the government has a different strategy, although they don't make clear what is their strategy. I must say, as I said, it's a chaotic situation, and it's very difficult to know what is going on and what is the right strategy in general. Even, you know, the left and right wings are not clear, because sometimes prominent leaders of the left wing side in Israel said that we need to attack now in Lebanon, and others from the right say vice versa. So I'm just saying the situation is not clear, but it doesn't seem that the government took the road that was suggested by many of the families and the majority of the Israeli public, to find a sustainable solution for Gaza by bringing some kind of a new regime, maybe a Palestinian regime, to seal a deal that would release all hostages and with ceasefires that may lead to the end of the war. There is, according to the polls, a majority of Israelis who support such solution. Unfortunately, it seems like the extreme right-wing part of the government is blocking this because of political reasons, and that's a big problem.
Do you have any information on the hostages that are still alive? Are you getting any sort of indication about who is alive, how many, and their conditions?
We know some things. I personally interviewed the released hostages, including the recently released hostages, and we all also seen with our own eyes the films from the conditions that were recent murdered hostages such as Carmel Gat were held. So we know pretty well, and we published that in our, on our medical reports, about the threats to their lives, such as the fact that they are confined to cramped dark spaces in underground tunnels with little or no ventilation, the fact that they don't get enough water, enough food, are exposed to infectious diseases because of lack of proper sanitation. I know very well the medical files of the hostages, and some of them are elderly or suffer from chronic illnesses, including also a toddler, a baby, young women. And we know also that they are undergoing torture, physical, mental, and sexual torture. And obviously the situation threatens their life every minute, all the time, and threatens their health. And I'm also concerned about their mental health status because of these conditions. And I can also testify to you that the families are consumed with frustration and despair, knowing their loved one are suffering. Every moment they feel like the clock ticking that their beloved are in such a dire situation. And this is very, very difficult for the families as well. We don't have time. That's the feeling.
Dr. Hagai Levine with the Hostages and Missing Families Forum in Israel. You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Lori London. World leaders are gathering for their annual meetings at the United Nations starting Sunday, and the wars in Gaza, Sudan, and Ukraine will be center stage. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
This year's United Nations General Assembly will take place against a bleak global backdrop. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
We see out-of-control geopolitical divisions and runaway conflicts, not least in Ukraine, Gaza, Sudan, and beyond.
The Gaza war is approaching its one-year anniversary, with more than 41,000 Palestinians killed and 100 hostages taken from Israel still in Hamas captivity. But progress toward a ceasefire is unlikely at the UN gathering. Randa Slim is a senior fellow at the Washington-based Middle East Institute.
I don't see much traction. I think both sides, in this case Hamas and the Israeli prime minister, seem to be gearing up for a protracted war, protracted conflict.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas are certain to focus on the war when they address the General Assembly on Thursday. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is also expected in New York. More than 2.5 years after Russia invaded Ukraine, peace remains elusive. Zelensky is likely to make his case for more military support and long-range weapons during a Security Council meeting on Ukraine on Tuesday and at the General Assembly on Wednesday. Richard Gowan is the UN Director for the International Crisis Group.
For Ukraine now, the big challenge is to stop Russia advancing in eastern Ukraine. The future of the war will be decided on the battlefield, not in the UN.
Russian President Vladimir Putin will not be coming to New York, but veteran Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will. Diplomats will also meet to discuss the war in Sudan. Despite multiple international initiatives, there has been no ceasefire, and 17 months of fighting has displaced over 10 million people and pushed millions more into hunger. New faces at the UN this month include British Prime Minister Keir Starmer and Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian. And U.S. President Joe Biden will make his final UN appearance. Again, Richard Gowan.
I think there is still some respect for his engagement with multilateralism, but I think there's also a lot of regret that he didn't give the UN a greater role in dealing with the war in Gaza.
Following two assassination attempts on former President Donald Trump, VOA asked if the United States could guarantee the safety of more than 130 presidents and prime ministers who will be coming to New York City. U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
We have pulled out all the stops. New York City has police everywhere. Diplomatic security is supporting Secret Service to also provide security for all the heads of state who will be here in town.
The Secretary General will kick off the Marathon Week of Diplomacy Sunday with a two-day-long Summit of the Future, which aims to reform the UN system to handle new challenges, including climate change and artificial intelligence. Again, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
We can't create a future fit for our grandchildren with systems built for our grandparents.
Negotiations on a substantive pact for the future have been difficult, but it is expected to be adopted. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And that's all the time we have for this week. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. For more news throughout the week, listen to International Edition Monday through Friday, or visit us anytime at voanews.com. Join us next week for more Issues in the News. Until then, I'm Lori London.